with the 32nd pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 98th edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast. I'm Chris McPherson, joined in the Westin in downtown Indianapolis. We are not on a radio row anymore. Long story behind that, and I think we can get into it that another time. Nonetheless, I'm joined inside the hotel room by none other than draft aficionado Fran Duffy.
Chris, it's wonderful to be here. I'm sitting exactly where I've been sleeping for the last 6 days, 7 days. So
I do enjoy the fact we get to do the podcast from the room and the comforts of our beds.
Podcasting in bed.
Nothing wrong with that. That's actually a pretty good title right there, so you can go with that. I want to thank you, Fran, because for the first time, I watched the workouts live.
Yes.
Okay, so today it was the defensive linemen, edge rushers, interior tackles, and the linebackers on the turf at Lucas Oil Stadium, and a much different experience. You know, I've watched it over the years on television, even the quarterback, wide receiver, tight end drills. Watched a lot of that on television, but Fran, who's been watching them last couple of days in person, you know, invited me to come join him. I figured it was a perfect opportunity to check it out. And it's definitely good to see them up close and in person. You know, it's one thing to see it on TV, but it's a different element when you get to see them live and in person.
Yeah, you know, especially at certain positions, I think it matters more than others. But I think just being able to see all these guys, and we've talked about it this week, being able to see them all go back to back to back, go through the same drills, execute the same movements. It's good to see because it helps you kind of compare apples to apples.
Certainly.
Everybody in the same environment asked to do the same things. It's definitely interesting for sure.
Now, one thing you noticed, Fran, today is that the groups were actually broken up into edge rushers, interior linemen, and linebackers.
Step in the right direction because for the longest time, the scouting combine was set up where it was D-line, DL, linebacker, and DB. Well, with how today's NFL is built, those are three very large umbrellas.
Exactly.
So, you know, you had your edge guys that were split between the D line and the linebacker. You had, you know, corners doing the same thing as safeties. And, you know, you'd see a corner go, and then you'd see a slot guy go, and then two safeties go, and a free safety and a strong safety, all going through all the same drills. It's hard to do apples to apples in that comparison. Same thing with along the defensive line. So being able to have those guys all grouped together, and it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty close. And I think that hopefully at some point we're going to start to see them officially branched out together. So
this is by your evaluation, though, because there are some guys who we were talking about before the podcast who we're going to touch on, and there are some guys that, you know, listed as a tackle or worked out with the interior alignment. And you're like, oh, I have him as an edge rusher. It's all depending however the league perceives them. They're the ones coming up with these groupings, but just trying to come up with a much closer to an ideal system, as you would say, Fran.
Very true.
So shall we get into it?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start with the edge rushers, and we'll start with the man atop the board, and we won't go too in-depth about him because basically if you're an Eagles fan, he's not going to make it to 32. There's no chance, and that's North Carolina State's Bradley Chubb. For me, seeing the physique, he's a well-put-together human being, moved with ease, and coming out of this, I was actually wondering, okay, he's in play for the number one overall pick, I would say, with the Browns, but there's going to be a new scheme in New York. Could he be in play for the Giants? And number two, could we see him coming to the NFC East?
They like their outside linebackers, James Betcher. They like those guys to be a little bit bigger and stronger. You know, you think of some of the players they've had in that role over the last few years. You know, you go to a Chandler Jones, you go to a Kareem Martin.
So we're going to see Arizona's scheme.
We're going to see the Arizona scheme. As far as I know, that's all I can go off of right now. I think we're going to see the Arizona scheme. Now, was James Betcher picking all of the edge rushers? You know, did that have to do more with Steve Keim instead of James Betcher? Well, that remains to be seen. But I think that Bradley Chubb could, in theory, fit there if they don't decide to go with one of the quarterbacks or Saquon Barkley or Quentin Nelson.
So we were talking while watching the workouts about Chubb, and it seems like Chubb is a high floor player
for sure.
Is he a higher ceiling guy than, let's go to our next guy, Marcus Davenport from Texas San Antonio?
I think that's
not UTEP.
Yeah, not UTEP, correct. I think that most people would say that Chubb is the better prospect, And I would agree. He grades out better. I think you can argue that Davenport has a higher ceiling in terms of his size, his athleticism, his natural power. You know, he's 6'6", 264 pounds. He posted better scores pretty much across the board in the athletic testing than Bradley Chubb, even though Chubb came in a little bit less across the board in terms of his overall size. So a lot of people are very excited about Marcus Davenport. Like I said, though, I think Bradley Chubb is a better player right now, and I think he's got the ability to be a better you know, he's got a higher chance of success, in my mind, than Marcus Davenport going to the next level.
Yeah, the question is, when you're picking that high, when you're picking one, two, or three, you want the safest guy possible. You have to weigh
Correct.
That risk-reward. Do you go over the guy who's going to have the better possible long-term future over the guy who you think could probably help you more right now and be the quote-unquote safer prospect down the line? Interesting watching them run to 40. Bradley Chubb goes out, you know, quick as can be, explosive, very impressive.
And they were back-to-back all day.
And then Davenport goes out, stumbles out of the gate. It was a little high out of the gate and finished it. And I'm like, oh, Chubb's had to definitely be better. And you show me the times as you're keeping track. And it's like, are you serious?
And then we looked online. We checked Twitter real quick.
Davenport's was faster.
Davenport's was faster. Yeah, the kid can move at 264 pounds. So he's an impressive physical specimen. Nowhere near the finished product that Bradley Chubb is right now.
All right, let's go. Maybe this is the in-between guy, Harold Landry from Boston College, who was a guy coming into this season, was projected as a possible top five. He basically was the Bradley Chubb.
Yes.
You know, projected to be the top guy, top edge guy in this class. Had his struggles during the 2017 season, so his stock dropped a little bit. But looking on the field today during the workouts, you could see why he was projected before the season to be such a high draft pick.
Extremely smooth athlete. His flexibility, his ability to accelerate going in and out of breaks. He's got really fluid hips. You know, he was asked to participate in linebacker drills, and he looked really good there. But you see that first step. You see that 40-yard dash time. The 4.65, yeah, that's impressive. But he had a 1.59 10-yard split at 250-plus pounds. That's an impressive number. And the 6.88 three-cone, that's going to have a lot of people excited because a lot of people believe that the three-cone drill is the most important for the edge rush group. So when you look at the 6.88 and the three-cone for Harold Landry, I think people expected that because his best trait on the field is his flexibility, his bend, and that showed up in that drill. I'm a big fan of Harold Landry. To me, it's a similar story to what you talked about with Derek Barnett a year ago coming out of Tennessee, is can he win in other ways outside of just winning on the outside? And it's more so with Landry. At least Barnett, he did flash the ability to go speed to power at times. There were some other moves that he did work in on occasion. Landry, for the most part, it's a lot of running the hoop, and he does it very, very well.
But
he's got to continue to try and develop those counter moves. And he talked about that. I spoke with him a little bit on Sunday. Today's Sunday. So on Saturday,
exactly.
Landry, he knows that he's got to continue to develop that. He's a pretty bright kid. I was pretty impressed with him speaking with him on Saturday. So he's a guy to watch. I really do think he's going to end up going a little bit higher than people think. He was bothered by that injury for a large part of this season. And now, to me, pass rushers, especially in this draft, there's not a lot of depth there. So I think that the good ones are going to go off the board early. We'll see if he's there when the Eagles do decide to pick, or when the Eagles do pick, though, because, you know, I think that there's a lot of people who wouldn't say, oh, yeah, he's definitely a lock for round one, so he would technically be there at 32. I think he's going to go off the board earlier, though.
That's the thing. It seems like that these three guys are going to be off the board by the time the Eagles get to number three. It remains to be seen, but by all the projections and by Landry's performance in Indianapolis, it's like you need edge rushers. You look at the Eagles and being able to get to the quarterback and what Brandon Graham did with the strip sack to help win the Super Bowl, you need to be able to come at quarterbacks in waves. So
that's what makes the Arden Key situation even more difficult.
Let's get into Arden Key. Physically, he looks the part.
Yeah.
But you were explaining to me his background from a weight standpoint, where he's played as high as 280, but he came to the combine 238.
And that's what – so he told us at his press conference that, you know, and I know he showed up at, I believe it was 215 or 220 when he first got to LSU. He was listed at 238 before the 2016 season, so this is about where he's at now. He said that he feels best right around there. He had an injury situation last offseason, right around this time. He had shoulder surgery, so he missed a bunch of time, couldn't work out. And he told us flat out, I couldn't work out, couldn't do much. I kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, I got lazy and I ballooned up and I gained a lot of weight. And he told us that he was up around 280, which is crazy amount of weight.
215
yeah.
entering Baton Rouge to 280.
So then he goes, so it was about, I actually have it down, last April, he tweeted out that he was at 255 and ready to go. So he lost. I guess he gained a bunch of weight, and then it was April after spring ball and everything, and he said, all right, I'm going to start losing it. Got down to 255, and he was ready to go. Got to camp, and he said that, you know, when I got to training camp, when I got early in the season, I was trying to play myself into shape early on in the year, and it wasn't until mid-season or so when he really got to start to feel like himself, and now he's back to 238. So there's going to be a lot of questions. The shoulder is going to get looked at. You know, what happened last offseason?
Because he, like Landry, was in that discussion for possibly being a top 10 pick.
Look, after his freshman year, people thought he's going to be a number one pick. He's going to be the next, because it was Clowney's year. Yep. Clowney had just gotten drafted. This guy is going to be the next big pass rusher. Even though, you know, he was a little bit skinny back then, but everyone saw, like, the motor. He saw the first step. He had all these flash plays, and I remember watching it. You know, I watch LSU every year. Arden Key looks legit. And you go back and even, you know, watching the tape is a little up and down. So it's gonna be one of the big conundrums of this draft, because you got those three guys at the top, Chubb, Landry, and Davenport. And after that, I think people are going to see, all right, who's the next guy after that? And for some people, that's going to be key.
It's America. Can you trust them?
No question.
You know, when we were talking in the stands, watching the workouts, I was like, is it sort of like a Robert Kimdichie situation where, hey, if you have the right coach who can motivate and possibly get out of them, you have a steal in the draft.
Yep.
But it's one of those things where it could set your franchise back if he's a guy who gets lazy and doesn't put in the work. And it comes down to the character. That's what it comes down to. Now, you know, you have someone like Jalen Mills who played with him at LSU. It's
sure.
Like, those are the types of guys you might rely on for some of that information. But this is where the scouts got to do the homework. It's like you can look at the tape and see one thing. You can see the testing scores here in Indianapolis. But, you know, you've got to try to get to know these young men as much as possible to be able to figure out if you can trust them to bring them to your program and see if you have the right facility, the right locker room to be able to get the most out of guys. Let's get to some of the guys who impressed you from a timing and testing standpoint, Fran. I'll start with Aude Aruna,
yeah.
Tulane. He was born in Nigeria. Fascinating story. Born in Nigeria, was brought to the U.S. to play basketball in high school. He was coaxed into playing football his senior year of high school, and after just 1 year of playing football, earned a scholarship to Tulane.
Yeah, he's a tough projection because he was really miscast in their scheme. I mean, he was a defensive tackle. He played as a three technique. He looks the part. I mean, you saw him in person.
Yeah.
Really long arms. You know, he's body beautiful, and that's
body
how
beautiful.
You want your defensive end to look. He is he's got really great length. I think if you keep things simple with him, you put him in a one gap scheme like what the Eagles have. You line him up at D end, or even as an outside linebacker in a 3-4, and you say go. I think he's got a shot to develop into something. Very, very intriguing player, and he tested very well. The three cone, which I just said earlier, was the most important. That was not a good number. But you look at his explosive numbers. You look at the obviously the 40, but then the 10-yard split. Both jumps were very, very good. So the straight-line explosiveness is certainly there with Aude Aruna. He's going to be a guy to watch.
All right, next guy, Lorenzo Carter. Out of Georgia.
Yeah.
He was a former top high school prospect within the state of Georgia, rated as high as number 2 in the country. You liked what you saw out there on the field today.
Yeah, 6'5", just under 6'5", 250 pounds, which was heavier than a lot of people thought. You know, he was playing at Georgia in the 220s, 230 range. So for him to come in at 250 and then today run 4.46, was really, really big for him. He jumped out of the gym as well. His size came back, like I said, a lot better than people thought. The question with him is ultimately, what are you going to do with him? Now, the fact that he came in at 6'5", 250, those 4-3 teams are now going to have a little bit more confidence that he could play defensive end. I was a little bit surprised. I talked to him on Saturday, and he talked about how I'm a pass rusher, you know, because there was a lot of talk about, is he a 4-3 will linebacker? Mm-hmm. Are you going to have to move him off the ball? He said, I'm at my best getting after the quarterback. If a team wants to move me there, you know, I'm open to it, but I'm at my best getting after the quarterback. And my eyebrows kind of raised because I'd known that a lot of people thought, hey, this guy's going to be a will linebacker. Then I saw the measurements, and I said, you know what, at this size, we'll see what we've got. The athleticism showed up. He had a really, really good day.
And he carried the weight. That's a big thing.
Carried it. He looked good. Looked good.
Exactly. Next guy here, he was actually one of the guys I wanted to see come into the combine, and that's Ohio State's Sam Hubbard. And that's because the production with him was very intriguing. But reading the analysts coming into this, there were questions about his athleticism. And it's one of those things where did he pile up the numbers because he had a lot of talent around him?
Which he did.
You know, or is he a guy who's going to have the athleticism to create his own magic once he gets to the NFL and perform pretty well out here in Indy, Fran?
Very, very well. He didn't run the 40s, but outstanding three cone. Which was, that, like I said, very, very important. Jumped very well. So the athletic scores are going to come back really positive for Sam Hubbard. He came in at 6'5", 270 pounds. So just the fact that he tested as well as he did at that size is going to have a lot of people excited. He's a good kid. He was a lacrosse recruit coming out of high school. He told a story about how he got his offer from Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer came into his school to check out other recruits. And he was in gym class. The football coach is the gym teacher, so Urban Meyer's talking to the football coach. And Hubbard looks over. He sees Urban Meyer there. They're playing dodgeball. He starts going nuts playing dodgeball. He got noticed by Urban Meyer, and that's how the relationship started. He got invited up to a summer camp based off of how he looked in a dodgeball gym class game. So it's an awesome story. The kid's not a finished product, though. And, you know, I thought that there were times where he was laid off the ball. So that kind of negates that explosiveness. You know, you could be as explosive as you want, but if you're laid off the ball, that, you know, you may look like a 4-3 guy on the track, but you're playing like a 4-6 guy on the field. So, you know, I think that when you look at him, he needs to get a little bit more refined from his hands, but I do think that he can come in and play defensive end. You feel pretty good about what you're getting in Sam Hubbard.
Next guy I'm going to bring up is not so much for how he performed and what he did on the field. It's interesting going through the different guys, and when this guy would go through all the drills, you tend to hear him grunting loudly as he went through every single one. And it's Virginia's Drew Brown. And it was just funny. It was like every time he went through the drill, it was like, arr, arr, arr. And you're kind of like, is he going to be like doing like this during a game? Because he do this all the time. You know, you brought the comparison. It's like Serena Williams in tennis.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
It's like the guy's going to wear himself out, or he's going to scare the offensive lineman across from him. He was on the field.
He was the high school Gatorade Player of the Year.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he was like the number one defense tackle in the country, a 5-star recruit, but he's from Chesapeake, Virginia, and UVA was able to get him to stay home. So you're talking about a guy with a great athletic pedigree. He's got great length. He's 6'3", 296 pounds. But he carries that weight very well.
Yeah.
Worked out with the second group of defensive linemen, which
was
mostly
the
edge guys.
The edge guys, yeah.
I view him as a 3 technique, as a defensive tackle on the inside. But he played defensive end in their 3-4 scheme, and he was asked at times to line up off the edge. So he's got some versatility there. I do think that he's more of an interior guy. But I'm really excited about him, and I know that he had a pretty good week from what I've heard down at the Senior Bowl. So had a good Senior Bowl week. Comes here to the combine and does very well. May have been miscast in their 3-4 scheme. Was not recruited by that coaching staff, so it's not like they recruited him to play in that scheme. They just kind of had to plug him into that round square peg into a round hole. But like his versatility, like his athleticism, the kid's very, very intriguing.
Should have grunted more. Maybe we would have gotten a better position.
He could have. That's a very good point.
Next guy I want to bring up here, another guy who, when I threw out the name to you, Fran, you were like, he's another one where – he worked out with the edge guys, but you view him as an interior lineman, and it's John Franklin Meyer from Stephen F. Austin, the same school that produced Eagles Hall of Famer Jeremiah Trotter. And the reason I bring him up is watching the workouts in person, you get to see some of the things on the periphery, some things that are not caught by the camera. And one of the things that the teams watch during the week is how do the guys interact with one another? You know, who becomes the alpha dog of each group? You know, who's kind of off to themselves, who's socializing. Teams are scrutinizing everything these young men do.
Of course.
And as the edge rusher group was warming up, getting ready to take the field, he's going around hyping guys up, high-fiving everyone. Like it caught my attention because I'm like, looking like, who's going down the list here? And I checked the sheet, and it's John Franklin Meyer.
I love that. I didn't notice that. I'm glad you did because it's certainly something that people will take notice of. He tested very well, 4.76 in the 40-yard dash at 283 pounds.
Yeah.
That guy was moving, and it wasn't just the 40. The rest of his numbers looked very good as well, and I did note that he looked good in position drills while we were out there watching. So you're talking about a player who comes from a lower level of competition, like you said, from SFA, extremely productive. 17.5 sacks in his career, which is a very good number. 37.5 tackles for loss, which is a great number, and 130 career tackles. I haven't watched him on film yet. But like a 6'4", 283 pounds, is an interior guy, probably, especially, you know, he's got decent length. I think that he's a guy that is going to be very interesting. I'm excited to go back and watch him because I would agree, I was very impressed with him in person.
A couple more edge guys here. Kylie Fitz started his career at UCLA, transferred to Utah after not getting on the field much early in his career. But he's been plagued by injuries.
Yes.
So he's going to be one of the medical guys you have to look at down the line. Is that going to be something that he'll have to deal with long term? So your thoughts on Fitz's workout today, Fran?
Yeah, he's had some foot issues in the past, but his workout was very good across the board. Namely, again, that three-cone drill was very, very good for him at 263 pounds. So that will have a lot of people impressed. He ran pretty well as well. From what I understand, he had a good week at the Senior Bowl, so building off of a good week in Mobile.
All right, the last guy here. You know, talk about a Virginia native here, but he ended up going to Florida State. Former top college recruit, Josh Sweat.
Yes.
Another medical question with him because he had knee surgery back in 2016. You know, how did he look from an explosive standpoint? Obviously, that's one of the things you're looking at when you're seeing these guys come back from big injuries.
Yeah, I don't know if that he was 100% back this year, but you're talking about a guy with great upside. You know, you mentioned the pedigree. He was a five-star recruit, number one defensive end in the country coming out of high school. Huge hands, long arms, love his wingspan. He's tall. He's got a pretty good build to him. He's got the athletic numbers were outstanding today. 1.55 in the 10-yard split. 4.53 in the 40-yard dash. Great number. 39.5 vert, 124-inch broad. Great, great numbers across the board. So he's going to show up on all these athletic testing ratios as coming up as one of the best testers from this combine. So when you start to pile all that together, you're going to look at a player that looks pretty good on tape. And, you know, I thought his tape was pretty good. The production wasn't great, and so there people will question him there, but a really intriguing prospect that is someone that we're going to want to keep an eye on.
Spider charts.
It's that time of year.
Mock draft
started on Friday.
Indeed. Let's go now to the interior linemen, or the guys who worked out at least with the D tackles.
Sure.
And we'll start with a player who has been mocked to the Eagles. I think ESPN's Todd McShay has the Eagles taking him at number 32, Taven Bryan out of Florida. And before we get into his workout and his performance, Fran, something that I asked you a short time ago off mic, when you hear of a big name or you're watching the big name guys go through the drills, a guy who's projected to be a possible first round pick, and he's doing the bag drills, he's doing some of the agility tests, is it hard for you at all not to get caught up in who it is to say, hey, if that's Bradley Chubb doing the bag drill, that must have been a good rep, versus taking each guy for what he's doing on the field?
Yeah, I think when it comes to these drills, you really just kind of have to be honed in on something specific, because if you're just kind of watching, you're not going to take anything away. So, you know, depending on what the drill is, I'll try and really kind of hone in on something specific. Some of those things are easily quantifiable, and some of them are not. So, you know, I may watch the gauntlet and see how cleanly guys are catching the football. That's a little bit easier to say, like, oh, yeah, that was a double catch. He let that into his frame, or he caught it clean away from his body, as opposed to how quickly he got off the bag and transitioned into his sprint in some of these bag drills we watched this morning. So it's definitely tougher, to especially just watching it live, and that's something that I'm still kind of working through. But it to me, I always am just looking at the guy and how he moves. And so if I'm going into a rep and I know, oh, hey, this is Taven Bryan, this kid's a pretty good athlete, this should look pretty good, I'm a human, I can't say that it doesn't affect how I'm looking at it, but you know, I try to keep that on my mind. If I see what looks like a good rep, I'm going to say call it like it is.
So with Taven Bryan, this happened to a couple guys that I noticed. We didn't have a Chris Jones, I believe it was, wardrobe malfunction, the Mississippi State defensive lineman.
A couple close calls today.
A couple close calls. One of them came from Taven Bryan, where they're like pulling up their shorts
during the
going
position
through the
drills.
Workouts.
Yeah, yeah.
But Taven Bryan, he's a lean guy. I mean, he's 6'5", 291.
Yep.
Well put together. It's like when you think of a defensive tackle, you know, I go through the Eagles locker room and I'm looking at Fletcher Cox and Tim Jernigan and those guys. He doesn't have that frame, but so explosive. His broad jump number was outstanding. And we were sitting in the stands, Fran, right in that area, and you're hearing the guys in the group go through the broad jump, and most of them were 8 feet plus, 8 feet plus. And you hear the guys saying the numbers, and they're all within the same ballpark. Taven Bryan goes up, and was it a 9'10"?
Yeah, it was 118 inches.
Like, it was one of those where you're like, that catches your attention, to say the least. So it very interesting to see a guy who's being mocked to the Eagles, at least in some drafts, you know, turning a good workout here in Indy.
235 interior defensive linemen have been drafted in the last 10 years.
235, okay.
14 have turned in a better broad jump than what we saw from Taven Bryan today.
Wow.
It's a pretty good number. 118 inches is the same as Sheldon Rankins from a couple years ago, a top 15 pick.
Yep.
They're a little bit better than Cam Jordan. I'm seeing Geno Atkins right in that range. Eric Armstead was a first-round pick right in that range. So you're talking about some guys who have some serious potential. And I think Taven Bryan does have some potential. I really like his snap anticipation. It was something I asked him about on Saturday, and it was something he says that he both reps and in terms of going through every day and also just natural instinct and reaction quickness. His ability to get off the ball, I think, is one of the best in the class, especially on the inside. I really like his ability to penetrate. And he talked about how it's not just about, yeah, I want to fly upfield and fly past the guard, but it's also I can fly into the guard and create contact and create a collision. Now there's a car wreck, and now the linebackers go up the float of the football. And I kind of liked that mentality from him. He's going to get knocked because his production was not very good. You know, he only started 13 games in his career, only 5.5 sacks, only 10.5 tackles for loss in his career. So over 3 years, the numbers obviously aren't great. But talking about a guy like you mentioned, he's 6'5", he's 291, he's got good length, 34-inch arms. He's going to be an interesting player, and I think he's got a shot at the first round.
Another player who, talk about getting a preconceived notion of what you expect, Tim Settle out of Virginia Tech. You hear he's got an explosive first step, and you know people have been posting videos on Twitter showcasing that, and you could see that in the workout today. And it's one of those things that it justified what everyone has been saying about him. So you could see the explosiveness, a little out of control when running during the agility drills, but at least these are some of these drills are the things that you're not going to see a defensive lineman most likely doing in a game. So at least that first step explosiveness, that at the very least was there.
Yeah, it was a 1.77 10, which 10-yard split, which on its face is not a super impressive number, but when you factor in that he's 329 pounds, I mean, now you're talking, all right, well, that's a pretty good number.
Yeah.
Born in Philadelphia, grew up in Manassas, Virginia. Really impressive kid in terms of being able to play at the point of attack. I've heard people have a wide range of opinions on him in terms of how they view him at the next level, but I do think he's got the ability to play at the point of attack. I do like his competitiveness and his motor. That showed up consistently on film. Talked to him on Saturday. Seems like he's all business, all football. I enjoyed talking with him. So he will be a player to watch. I'll be interested to see where he ultimately gets drafted. Typically, guys like him don't go in the first round, and some people are putting him in the first round of mock drafts.
A guy who stood out to me, I don't have his exact numbers in front of me, Daron Payne, just because for as big as he is, just makes it look so effortless moving around the field.
Yes, and watching him on film, that's how he looks. Really stepped up this year. I asked him, what was the biggest area that you – because I watched him as a sophomore in 2016. I thought he was a solid player.
Yeah.
This year he looked like a first-round pick. So I asked him, what's the one area where you feel like you improved from 16 to 17, and where do you need to improve from 17 to 18? And he thought that this year he really showed that he could be a three-down player, and I agree with him. And that's – honestly, I graded him as a backup, you know, type of rotational player as a sophomore. He's a three-down player for me right now, and that makes him – he's going to be in the mix for the first round for a first-round pick. And he talked about how he wants to continue to get a little bit better with his hands and mm-hmm. things like that moving into 18. But a player that I'm a big fan of, I was pretty impressed with him as well. The test scores were solid. There were some that were pretty good numbers. He had a 1.67 10-yard split. The jumps were solid. The change of direction stuff was solid. Nothing special, but, again, at over 310 pounds, moves pretty well. And in the drills – he made things look easy.
He carries it well. That's the biggest thing.
Yes, he does.
Next guy I want to bring up here, Khalil McKenzie.
Yeah,
of
that's
Tennessee.
Another guy.
He's the son of Raiders general manager, Reggie McKenzie.
Every time he came up, I feel like he would go through a rep, I would say to you, man, that just looked good.
Yes.
Every single time. And when I watched him on film, not a guy that I like praised for his athleticism. I thought he was a solid athlete, but the first step I didn't think was great, anything like that. I didn't think he's a pass rusher. I think he's more of a gap stuffing nose tackle. I was impressed by how he moved today. I thought everything looked really easy, so that was good to see from him.
Next guy up here is a guy that I actually liked, ooh, sort of the same reason, B.J. Hill out of North Carolina State.
Yeah.
A lot of the same reason. It was every time he went through a rep, I keep checking the sheet. Who is this guy? Who is this guy? And it was, B.J. Hill. It seemed like time after time, again, was a running back in high school. Honorable mention, all ACC selection. But part of that amazing defensive line for the Wolfpack this past year.
So they had four guys here on the defensive line. And I think when you look at what's funny is that they've got the two defensive tackles here, Justin Jones and B.J. Hill. B.J. Hill, who I believe is a better prospect, I think he's more of a nose tackle type. Maybe he plays 3-4 D end. I'm kind of going back and forth on him. Justin Jones is known as more as the three technique penetrator. B.J. Hill tested better than Justin Jones across the board.
Wow.
And I would agree. He looked good in drills too. So it was interesting to see. I was really disappointed. While we're talking about the NC State D lineman, I was so disappointed to see that Kentavious Street got hurt on
the
first.
He's going to be the next guy I was going to bring up. Yep.
He pulled up late in the drive. And I still... He came up lame on the 40, still finished with a pretty good time for a defensive tackle, because I do view him as a D tackle. Talked to him about that, and he does think that he can impact the game more so in the interior. But, I was disappointed to see that happen.
He played both at NC State.
Played both
inside,
career.
Outside, so he has that versatility. So next up, Breland Speaks, Mississippi native, stayed in state, went to Ole Miss. The question with him coming into this, he's one of those one-year production guys. It's, how do you project that moving forward, knowing that when you hope to have that production year in and year out, that consistent total throughout the course of a college career. He's really a guy who piled up the numbers in 2017.
Yeah, and the other question is just what is he? Because he played throughout all over his career.
What is a Breland Speaks?
He was a high school linebacker who early in his career had to play D tackle at 280 plus pounds. So he would, if this was 2003, there'd be tweener written on about him in every single scouting report. So what is Breland Speaks? Is he a defensive tackle? Is he a defensive end? He went through some linebacker drills. Some people are talking about him standing up. He did a little bit of that in the back end of 2017. So I got the sense talking to him that he liked playing off the edge. So maybe he wants to be a 4-3 D end. I still am going to view him more, though, as a defensive tackle. He's a guy who tested very well compared to defensive tackles. He's going to be very interesting because I think he's going to need – if he gets in the right scheme and is put into a position where he can succeed, he's going to be a really fun player to watch in the next level.
This next guy is one you liked a lot. You kept noting him. I think Greg Cosell from NFL Films, he was sitting with us in the stands at this point and was noting him as well. Harrison Phillips,
yeah,
of Stanford.
High floor. To me, and it's funny that Greg said it, because when I first saw Harrison Phillips in person at the podium on Saturday, I thought the same thing. He looks like the defensive version of Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame. I mean, barrel-chested, no neck, thick thighs, bubble butt, like everything exactly like how Quentin Nelson is. Really impressive kid personally. And then you watched him move. For a guy that's that big, he moved pretty well. Every time he went up, he said, wow, this kid's going to be a good player. And he uses his hands very well. The big question is, what kind of athlete is he? His 40 wasn't good. I really don't care. Everything else was pretty solid. So, and that's what he needed. I think he did everything that he needed to do this week. To me, he's going to be a first-round pick.
On a side note, all the Stanford kids
and
Notre
Dame
kids.
So impressive.
V Very impressive.
So impressive.
Justin Reed, the defensive back from Stanford, spoke to the media today, and you just came away. He was engaging, well-spoken, went in depth on answers, showed a lot of personality in his answers.
Yep.
It just made you walk away, and you're just like, I've got two boys. I hope they're going to
Stanford
at some point.
I talked with Quentin Meeks today, and I was blown away by him as well. The son of former NFL defense coordinator Ron Meeks, who won a Super Bowl with the Colts. I'm a big fan of Quentin Meeks, more so now that I've spoken with him as well. The kid, he just gets it.
All right, let's keep going here with the D tackles. Deshaun Hand,
yep.
Once the number one high school recruit in the entire country, ended up winning two national titles with the Crimson Tide, was also a state wrestling champ.
Yep.
In high school.
Philly kid, was born in Philly, moved to Woodbridge, Virginia. You mentioned the pedigree. It tested pretty well. Not everything was great, but I do think he's an interior guy that has the ability to play with some position versatility. If you play a 4-3 team, maybe you do think he can still play on the outside as a strong side, kind of base defensive end. But I think he's a pretty intriguing player. He wasn't able to put it all together during his time with the Tide. So that I'm sure that's going to come up during interviews this week, or has already for him. Why couldn't he put it all together? Where was all the consistent production during his career?
All right, three more linemen to get to here.
Wow.
First, James Looney, transfer, started his college career at Wake Forest, went to Cal because, in part, his older brother, Joe, was playing for the 49ers at the time. He now is playing for the Cowboys. Your thoughts on his workout today?
Yeah, he was a high school weightlifter and shot putter. I like James Looney on tape. Like, he's a nice player. He's fun to watch, and he tested very well today across the board. So he's a player that I'm excited to do a little bit more work on. I was excited about his versatility. He plays played defensive end in their 3-4 scheme. In that 4-point stance, Jerry Azenero, the former Eagles defensive line coach, was their D line coach this past year. So used to watching that scheme and what those guys are asked to do, and he did it at a high level.
Rasheem Green. First-team All Pac-12 selection at USC. Am I correct? He was put through linebacker drills.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, as well.
Yes. Extremely athletic kid. 4.74 in the 40-yard dash, or in the 40-yard dash. Everything was great across the board. He's 6'4", 275. He's a great athlete for an interior player. The question is, number one, if you're going to keep him inside, can he defend the run? Because he did not do it at a very high level this year, at least not consistently. Any good offensive line they went up against, he really struggled. So that's number one. Number two, if he doesn't play on the inside, do you feel good about him playing outside? Because he's not a polished pass rusher right now. Playing on the inside, he won more off physical ability. The thing I like to say, he won more with his feet than he did with his hands, which is fine. You like guys that can win with their feet, but you're in the NFL, you're going to need to win with your hands to be able to win. So he was put through some edge rush drills. He did drop back in coverage. Looked pretty good doing it at 275. So, if a team like the Giants, that's a body type that those guys, like the Giants to me, in their defensive scheme, they would look at him as an outside linebacker in my mind. So that would be something to watch.
Our last guy has an interesting backstory. A native of Canada, started his football career or was playing at Simon Fraser at the collegiate level above the border, and then made his way to Fort Hays. Nathan Shepherd.
Yep. A little bit older. Obviously, been on quite a journey for him. He's going to be a 24-year-old rookie, but has checked all the boxes, was extremely productive in college, looked good on tape. I like his athletic ability on film. I thought he played very well. I liked his play personality. Another former high school linebacker who transitioned to the defensive line. Goes to the Senior Bowl, tore up the Senior Bowl when he was down there. I think he only practiced for one day, maybe two, before getting the injury. And then he had a really good workout today. Looked good. The testing was good. The drills that we saw were good. He's checking all the boxes across the board.
All right, let's transition to the off-the-ball linebackers.
Talked about a lot of defensive linemen.
Yeah. Well, before we record, I have a list of guys I want to touch on, and then Mike Fran, who are the guys? And he just gives us like laundry list of people. It's like, all right,
a long day.
All right, off-ball linebackers. Overall, big picture theme: speed.
Yes.
Seems like it was the name of the game with this group out here today, flying some amazing 40 times, and. You got to start with Shaquem Griffin from Central Florida.
What a story.
The tremendous story. Obviously plays with one hand, goes through the bench press, wears a prosthetic. He says personal best was 11, was hoping to get 6 here in Indy. And the crowd, you know, between the crowd cheering him on, Josh Hinks, the Eagles head strength coach, he's the one who's overseeing the bench press. You know, he's offering the motivational messages to lock him out, keep it going. Ends up putting up 20 reps of 225 pounds, and then runs the fastest 40 by a linebacker in over a decade, if I'm correct. It's just going to bring up the debate in terms of how high will Shaquem Griffin be selected, because it's not just about the fact that he has one hand, but he's pretty undersized for the linebacker position. 6 foot, 227 pounds, if I'm correct?
Yes. Their two linebackers in the last 10 years have run 4.38 unofficial, and whether that was here or at their pro days. Ryan Shazier and Deion Jones.
It's amazing. It's now, Deion Jones is a guy you look at and you think of, because I remember when the Eagles were getting ready to play the Falcons in the playoffs, and it's like he's known as an undersized guy, but...
He came in here at 222, five pounds less than Shaquem Griffin.
Which play, I forget from the game off the top of my head, did Deion Jones get badly burned by in that playoff game? I'm going to have to look it up. It's not coming up. There's one play in particular where I remember seeing the highlights, seeing the film, and Deion Jones is just way out of position on the play.
It was the Nelson Aguilar play, run. It was the handoff.
Thank you. Couldn't come to mind there, so... but again, you know, the backstory, it's inspirational. The question is going to be how high will a team be willing to select him? Because you have to find a role for him.
What's he going to play? And this is just watching him on film. Like, what role is he going to play? He was a 3-4 outside linebacker in college. He played safety in 2015. So he does have some experience playing safety. He went through DB drills today for that reason. I think when you look at Shaquem Griffin, you see a guy who obviously is an outstanding athlete, who's obviously undersized. He's going to deal with the fact that he's only got one hand, has shown the fact that he can play with only one hand. We've seen players in the NFL play with a club on one hand.
You brought this up. Very smart. Yeah.
I take that out for the split second. You're talking about a guy who's undersized. Can he win at the point of attack? I don't know. He's never played really from a stacked position, and he's going to have to do that in the NFL if you see him as a linebacker. To me, I see a sub-package player and a role player, and if that's the case, then you're probably not taking that guy too high. And when I say sub-package player, I don't mean like he's going to be an every-down nickel player.
No,
I
not
mean
like a slot corner.
Yeah,
or
right. Like it's, yeah. You know, you're going to pick your spots. He's not going to play 65 snaps a game. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how he's viewed. That's for sure. Obviously a great kid, great story, super tough. You don't want to bet against him.
No.
But it's going to be interesting to see how he's valued by the time we get to April.
All right. Next guy I want to bring up, considered arguably the best off-ball linebacker in this class, Tremaine Edmonds. He's just 19
arguably, yep.
years old.
Just 19. I spoke with him. Seems like a very mature kid. Obviously still very young, but 6'4", 253. He's got... longer arms than any linebacker drafted in the last 10 years.
Wow.
So he's 34.5-inch long arms, 83-inch wingspan, which is also a benchmark there for linebackers in that span. Look, he's really athletic. He didn't go through all the drills today. He did run a 4.54 laser time 40-yard dash, which is a very good number, especially, again, for 253 pounds. I think that he still has some growth to do in terms of his on-field play. If we're talking top 10, I'm probably not in on that. You get a little bit later in the first round, now I'm starting to buy in a little bit just because of that long-term potential. But I think you're talking about some of these other linebackers as more sure things. And even the Leighton Vander Esch of Boise State and Roquan Smith, obviously from Georgia. To me, like if you're saying, okay, you're going to have Josie Jewell in the third round or fourth round, or you can take Roquan Smith late first, I'm probably taking Josie Jewell just because, it's a more sure thing and you get the value there. He's going to be very interesting, though, and some people think he's still going to go top 5, top 10.
Hey, fortunately for the Eagles, they don't have to worry about the debate.
And if he falls to the Eagles, there's a discussion.
Yes.
That's a discussion.
Speaking of Vander Esch, he looks like a grasshopper out there. He's got long arms, long legs, and just the way he's able to maintain his bend going through the drills. Mm. That was extremely impressive. This is, you know, one of the quote-unquote risers, it seems like, in the process. And he's another one who's been mocked to the Eagles in some analyst mock drafts. And from his performance here, I don't know if he's going to make it to 32.
Somebody's going to, because we've talked about a lot of guys who are like, oh,
I don't know. But
I think when you look at linebacker, I think you can boil it down, and this is something I learned from Phil Savage a few years ago, and he said that this was a Ozzie Newsome thing in Baltimore. You look at linebacker, really anybody on defense, but specifically linebacker, it comes down to speed, toughness, and instincts. Instincts are there with Van Der Esch. Toughness is there with Van Der Esch. People wanted to see what he was going to run. He ran 4.66. That's good enough for me, for Leighton, especially considering he plays faster than I thought he was going to time. So you're talking about a guy who sees things quickly. He's big. He's strong. I'm going to continue to watch more. People that I respect a lot have watched a lot of them and have come away really, really impressed, namely Mike Mayock and Greg Cosell. So I've watched two games. I'm excited to watch more of them. I liked what I saw when I first watched.
Next guy, another popular mock pick for the Eagles, Rashawn Evans. Just looked very fluid out in the coverage on the field.
Yeah, did not work out through the athletic testing, but a player that has the physical makeup, talked to him, was really impressed with him. Talked to him for a few minutes on Saturday, and I was really impressed with him. Big kid who made all the calls for the defense this year for Alabama. I was a big fan of him, and we've talked earlier this week about that jump that he made from year one to year two at the linebacker spot because he was a pass rusher for the first couple of years. I'm a fan of this kid.
All right, last guy here, Jerome Baker.
Yeah.
Native Ohio. For Ohio State, a top 10 national recruit. And, nice little thing on his resume. He has a career pick six against Baker Mayfield. So
underrated, I think, right now. Because coming into the year, I thought Jerome Baker was a first-round pick. No one's talking about him in that range right now. Maybe that'll change. He's 229, so a little bit on the smaller side. But he's got giant hands. He runs really well. He can play at the point of attack. I think his instincts are a little bit underrated. There are times where I think he's a little bit slow to see things, but overall I think they're pretty good. He's an aggressive kid. I love his motor. I love his willingness to come downhill. He just needs to be able to get a little bit stronger and then play off those blocks a little better. But I think he's a potential star at the next level. I'm a fan of this kid, so he's going to be an intriguing player.
Is it a similar draft situation, not comparing player here,
yeah,
to Jared Davis? Ooh. Who was selected in the first round by the Detroit Lions, was kind of off the radar.
Who I loved.
And then all of a sudden, late in the process, you start hearing that this kid could be going in the first round, and all of a sudden, sure enough, the Lions took him.
That's a pretty good comparison in terms of the situation, because he would be another one that I thought was underrated throughout the whole process, and you're talking about a guy, speed, toughness, instincts.
Yep.
This kid, speed, toughness, instincts, that wins out.
So
that's I like that.
All right, so that's our recap, our thorough recap of the D lineman.
46-minute recap. Nice. Going out strong.
As you can hear my voice going in and out there. last but not least, certainly, your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, in our draft mailbag, this is why it's important to not just send in your questions on Twitter, because a couple of our questions are coming from iTunes.
That's the best way to be able to get your question on the show.
Certainly. Rate, leave a comment, ask a question, and it will definitely, definitely get asked.
Especially if it's a 5-star rating.
Yes, indeed. First question comes from at CMAC Eagles, though.
Oh, a surprise question.
A return question, two days in a row. Blue ink or black ink when working with a pen?
I love the blue ink pen, but I'm typically a black ink guy, but I do love a good blue ink pen.
I wonder if this is the type of question that comes up during the combine interviews. You know, are you a dog or a cat? Like, those weird questions.
Yeah.
I'm blue ink all day long.
I don't blame you for a blue. Do you ever vary off the blue or the black, though? Do you ever go to a red pen or, like, a purple pen or something?
For editing things like Game Day Magazine, you throw in the red pen, the red marker. I'll do the red Sharpie at times for that.
Ooh, that's aggressive.
But for the most part, it's blue pen all day long.
Mike, all right, I won't blame you.
All right, first fan question here.
Okay.
From we'll do the Twitter one first. At A Grim Grim, in light of the combine results and 2017 tape if DJ Moore, the Maryland receiver, is there at 32, are you making him your first-round pick?
To me right now, he is worthy of a first-round pick. Do I think that he's going to go in the first round? I'm not really sure, and here's why. I think the if you were to group all these receivers together, he's probably at the top of this group now, but there's that big group right in that, like, range of the end of first round to, like, early third round that all these group guys are tightened up together.
Yep.
It's a matter of when the run happens. You know, as you know, the draft is a series of runs. And so if he goes off, if people think that all these receivers are going to start to go, we need to get one now, like what happened with the receivers in the top 10 last year, you're going to see a run happen early. And if that's the case, then DJ Moore will go off the board early. I think he's worthy of a first-round pick. He checks all the boxes in terms of athletic scores. The tape was very, very good. He's a great kid. High school people love him. The people in college love him. I haven't heard anything about how he's done in interviews yet, but I would assume that those are going to come back pretty good. I was impressed with him, talking with him for a few minutes on – was that Friday? That was Friday.
Yes, I know.
So, yeah, he's an impressive kid. So we'll see where he ends up going.
All right, write him on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. His first of many questions of this offseason is, who are the most productive linebackers in the draft? And the reason that this question is being asked is – Joe Douglas leaned toward productive players like Donnell Pumphrey and Derek Barnett a year ago. So Eagles fans, assuming Wright Hymn is an Eagles fan, very, very smart, trying to like catch up on some of those trends.
Where your head's at. Josie Jewell, 433 tackles is an extremely high number. 32 ball disruptions. All right, so what I classify as a ball disruption is a pass breakup or an interception.
Okay.
Simple. No linebacker drafted in the last 10 years has posted more.
Wow.
That's pretty good. Very productive. Didn't go to the Senior Bowl. I asked him why. He said he got sick after his last team's last game. Wasn't able to train. Didn't feel good enough to be able to go down. So Josie Jewell, 43 starts in his career. He's big. He's physical. He's not going to be a first-round pick. I think you're probably talking about him maybe even early day three, you know, fourth, fifth round. I like his film a lot. Yeah, I think he's a future starter in the NFL. So Josie Jewell is super productive. Fred Warner from BYU, 20 ball disruptions.
You're a big Fred Warner fan, too.
I love Fred Warner. He didn't test as – he tested fine. He had a good day. But didn't test quite as well as I thought he was going to, but still pretty good. Fred Warner I'd put in there. Roquan Smith was very productive this year, but over the course of his career, just because he's a junior declared, the numbers aren't super, super high, but was very productive this year. Let's see. I'm just kind of going through the list here, seeing who was super productive. I could have done this, I suppose. Micah Kizer from Virginia, 408 tackles in his career. Was a three-year starter at middle linebacker in that 3-4 scheme. So you look at him. He was very productive. I'll throw one more in there. How about Tigray Scales from Indiana, senior? A lot of people, a lot of draft analysts like Tigray Scales a lot. He only went to the Shrine Game. He didn't go to the Senior Bowl. 6 foot, 230 pounds, very short arm, so he's undersized, but 46 tackles for loss, 324 tackles, 14 ball disruptions. Good career overall for Tigray Scales, the Cincinnati, Ohio native.
All right, so our last two questions, both from, again, you got to leave them at Apple Podcasts, iTunes, for Matt, we'll say Esquire, ESQ, so I'll go with Esquire on
this
it's one.
Yeah, safe bet.
Let's see. Please give thoughts on the best two or three offensive tackles who realistically might be available at 32 and whether you take them there or trade back and get another draft pick.
I would take McGlinchey if he were there from Notre Dame. I don't feel supremely confident that he's going to be there, but as we've said, somebody's going to be
somebody's
there. These guys that we've talked about.
That'll be a good podcast topic for us in the coming weeks.
Yeah. I mean, somebody's going to be there.
Yes.
You know, all these guys can't. We can almost like make like a thing of, I think, I'm trying to think of who does this. I think it might be Bob McGinn in his yearly piece that just came out.
Which we wanted to read.
But it's behind a paywall.
It's behind a paywall.
We're going to rely on the pirates out there. you know, the guys that will definitely be gone and the guys that may be gone and the guys that likely be there. But anyway,
Green Bay's picking higher this year. Yeah. So it actually hurts us because it's like usually it's 25. It's like, all right, the guys will definitely be gone by 25. It's a bigger group. I believe they're 14, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so I think you look at Mike McGlinchey, probably not going to be there, but I would definitely take him.
It's funny here because I actually posed this question to Mike Mayock in the one-on-one interview.
Oh, okay. Well,
that will
please,
be available
please share.
Next week.
Give us a little taste.
What's it? And Martinez Rankin is another one. He's not saying whether or not you take him. He would be a guy who could be in that discussion there.
Didn't test, for the in case you were wondering. We don't have numbers on him from this week. But after that, I don't know that there's tackles that we're talking about in the late first round. I think there are guys that are in the discussion now, but I don't know that I'm necessarily all the way there as a pure tackle.
Pure tackle.
Because if you're talking guards,
remember,
now I'm more in the discussion.
Will Hernandez is a guy who...
Yeah, Will Hernandez, one of the first guys I'm going to go back and rewatch.
Isaiah Wynn.
A lot of people think Connor Williams from Texas, and they think he's a tackle. I think he's probably better at guard, and I'm not sure that he's in that range anyway. Crosby from Oregon.
Going back to tackles real quick, Orlando Brown.
Yeah, that's the other one.
I mean, that's another one where you have to go back to the evaluation, and didn't have his best day.
No. Will Richardson on film is close to that area, but he's had a couple suspensions in the last couple of years, so interviews will be big for him. So I don't know.
That's the way he casually though. A couple suspensions out there, you know.
So I don't know. I mean, he could go that high, maybe not.
Who was the guy we were watching? And that guy's a felony.
I can't say that.
it's like oh, just felony. That's all. We'll get to our last question here from Matt, and it's a more of a philosophical question.
I enjoyed this question.
And it is a very good one. Why do offensive tackles have to be so tall? You understand about arm length, keeping the defensive lineman away from your body, but every year, his words, we see stiffs at 6'6 with slow feet and no balance where a shorter defensive end can get underneath them, then turn the corner or bull rush. Since there are a lot more people in the world who are 6'3", presumably we can find a 6'3", 320-pound athlete with the feet and technique to stay in front of a defensive end. And perhaps the quarterback will be grateful for having a smaller person in front of him to have to see over.
Fair question. Here's my answer. Number one, I think you go to the fact that you mentioned the body type 6'3", 320. It's rare to see a guy who's 6'3", who is short and 320 pounds and is actually athletic enough to be able to move in reverse against a super athletic 250-pound defensive end.
Fair enough.
So that's very I would say it's near impossible to find.
Forget the weight part.
The weight part is important because I think you need to be – in the NFL, you need to be strong enough to be able to hold up at the point of attack. We've seen some tackles in past drafts, recent drafts. Garrett Bowles, for instance, comes to mind. The kid last year was a first-round pick for the Denver Broncos. We saw him. I watched him on film early in the season, and he got manhandled by pass rushers early in his career because he was not big enough to be able to hold up. And he came in, I think, at 297 last year. So you need to have some girth to you, and you need to be able to have some core strength. So I think the fact that just – in terms of body type, that's why offensive line it's not easy because you need to be strong enough to be able to hold up at the point of attack, but also quick enough to be able to protect the edge. Those guys aren't growing on trees.
No, and you're moving in the most awkward position.
Yeah.
You're bent. You're that big. You're bent over and moving backwards.
Well, it goes back to the Dave Gettleman quote that you heard on Thursday.
You
know, the three-point stance. It's an awkward position. You're asking them to do something that not most humans are being asked to do. So it's not hard. It's not easy, I should say, to find offensive line. And that's why so often, what do we see? We see defensive linemen moving. We see tight ends converting because teams are always looking for that body type, that physical skill set to be able to make the transition from wherever their old position was to the offensive line. We see Alejandro Villanueva, former college wide receiver, but he's got the body type. He's quick. You need to be big enough in terms of your strength, but then also quick enough. So I think that's why I don't think the height is necessarily like a hard number. I think it really comes down to, like you mentioned, you need the length. And that's the other thing. You're not going to be. You're not going to have 34-inch arms or 33.5-inch arms and be 6 foot two. There's not many of those guys walking around either.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's. I think it really the height is just a, more of a secondary factor when it comes to all those other traits being primary.
It also seems like that if you're someone who's that big and that athletic, they put you on defense.
Right. Exactly.
To get after the quarterback.
Yes.
So it's like almost a supply and demand thing. It's like if you're big and athletic, they want you rushing the passer, not. Not to say they think of it as a waste, but maybe not the best use of a player's resources.
Right.
Or the best use of the team's resources to put a guy in that situation.
Well, it's the Bill Parcells world theory of there's only so many guys in the world that are, you know, 6 foot six, 315 pounds that can, you know, move like a dancing bear. There's only so many of those guys. That plays to Matt's point a little bit and that it's they're rare, but to me, that's why it's at a premium. And it's you have to be able to be strong enough. You have to be able to be quick enough. And that's really where we're at right now.
All right. So I don't know how long we've gone here, but
we've eclipsed an hour.
We're over an hour. Okay. So we're going to wrap things up. So schedule for us, we are traveling back to Philadelphia on Monday. So we are just going to do a full combine recap podcast encompassing a little bit of everything on Tuesday.
Yes.
All of you out there. So thank you all for the comments. Again, you can leave them on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, PhiladelphiaEagles.com, Twitter, wherever you listen to our podcasts. But thank you very much for the support, and hopefully we will be recapping the D-backs as well as the entire Combine class in just a couple of days. So for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Thank you for joining us here on the Journey into the Draft podcast from Indianapolis. We will talk to you when we are back in Philadelphia.